Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Welcome back to Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC Movies podcast. I'm your co-host, Taylor Jackson.
And my name is Andy Piper. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of Beyond the Batcave, which is a special ape episode. We're only talking about apes today. I'm sure you knew it was building to this because of the amount of times I have mentioned chimpanzees on past episodes. Who knows why they keep coming up, but almost the entire episode today is about apes.
Yeah, we're going through every single issue of any Batman comic that has ever had a monkey. And
surprising amount.
47, to be precise. So it should be a good time.
Yeah, we're just going to go through them panel by panel and read every word. So
buckle up. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, but we're just joking.
Yeah, we're not actually going to do that. We wouldn't do that to you or ourselves. I have much more self-respect than that.
Well, I don't think we'd have to do it, honestly. Like, the hardest part of that would be finding every single comic that has an ape in it.
That's true.
But there's probably a website out there somewhere called
Batman.
Have you ever
apes?
Seen batmanfeats.com?
No.
It's actually a very cool website. I highly recommend it. It's basically the perfect source for any time you want to cite how awesome Batman is, because you can go on that website and just talks about all of Batman's incredible feats of strength, stealth, willpower. It's very cool. And it has the links to the comics in which he does it, and they're all linked to like a photo bucket. So it's very awesome. So I remember one time I was remembering this scene where Batman like hides in the watchtower from Superman and Martian Manhunter for like an hour, and they just can't find him. And I was like, where the heck was that? And I stumble on this website called batmanfeats.com, and it took me like 12 seconds to find it. Once I was on there, I just went to feats of stealth, and it was like right there. It was like, this is probably Batman's best stealthy feat. Here you go.
That's incredible.
So little plug for batmanfeats.com. I don't know who runs that website, but he's awesome. It's very cool. There's also a Nightwing one.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, a little spin-off. I don't know what else there is, but
the world may never know.
Yeah. But we were kind of serious about the apes thing, coming back to that. Because I think you'll remember, I don't remember if I reported on air or off air, but last time we had a little recording session, I reported that I had almost watched a Matt Reeves movie. And now I've seen two.
I want to say that was on air.
Okay. So last time I saw Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and this time I watched Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes. So I'm ready to report. I'm educated on Matt Reeves as a director now, at least his two of his most recent films. I'm ready to talk about it because we're going to be talking a little of the Batman today.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why let's just dive into this news, I guess.
Yeah, so the Batman is the first thing up on our slate of news to talk about, most of it involving Matt Reeves. So let's go through this news regarding the Batman and kind of just talk about your recent experiences with the Apes films and how you could see the vision of Matt Reeves taking hold. Some of these are just kind of bits here, but in an interview with Variety, he said he wants to marry noir with personal. We already talked about kind of the noir.
Yeah, we did a little bit.
Yeah.
In a previous episode, so I don't think I have anything new to say about that.
Right.
Certainly the personal aspect, I do have some stuff to say about that, but I can get to it in a minute.
Okay, sweet. He also said to Yahoo Movies that he hopes to tell a very emotional story, kind of going off that same kind of personal take. In an interview with Fandango, he said, well, I guess people are reporting that he's hoping to have a trilogy of Reeves Batman films. But the more I look into that, that's not what he's saying. And so I wanted to read his little snippet here from Fandango.
Okay, let's do it.
So he said that, I have ideas about an arc, but really the important thing is just to start. You have to start with one, he said. You know, you have to start with a story that begins something. Reeves said, and then later he says, and when Mark and I began Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, we knew what our goals were, but we didn't know how we were going to get there. And I would say that more relates to the way I see a Batman story. It's a kind of ambition for a series of stories, but really the most important thing is going to be to tell a vital story first. So, I mean, I think people took this to being trilogy because it's kind of what we're used to now. It's like kind of threes, but I didn't see
anyone mention trilogy at all.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think any person with a franchise as big as Batman is going to hope to do more than one, you know, and they kind of have ideas to where they could take it. But, I mean, I think he brings up the good point. It's like, hey, as of right now, we're just going to make one great movie. And we have ideas of how it could take off from there. But, I don't know. I thought I'd just kind of bring out that little buzz of news. So.
Yeah, I like that. And so, let's go on to the next one, too, before we start talking about Apes. Because I feel like the Apes movies are a great case study of everything that Matt Reeves is saying right here. So, we've got another little snippet from an interview, looks like, on MTV's Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. Okay, so this is pretty much what he said on that podcast. All right, so the host, Josh Horowitz, asked if he was going to be working off of Ben Affleck and Geoff Johns' original script. No, says Reeves. It's a new story. It's just starting again. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be really cool. All right. So the big question is, how do we feel about this? Maybe last week I would have been apprehensive, but now this blows my mind. I could not be more excited. And what's the difference?
I'm in the middle. Like part of me feels like it's kind of funny that we went through all that like fuss about the Ben Affleck script, and then now we're just gonna scratch it all, and then, but I'm glad that, you know, we get to see kind of a director's vision go through, because one other kind of news bit too is that he had an interview with UpRocks, and where he talks about his ability with the Warner Brothers executives to kind of get assurances, and it was the word that he used, to make this film his way. And that when he's had other experiences with the films, like the Apes films, he's kind of had an agreement when people come up to him later and say, hey, how about we go this? And he's like, no. And they're like, why? And he's like, because that's not the film we agreed to. And so...
Yeah, absolutely. And I think watching Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad had to make any director with a vision a little bit nervous, just kind of the way those played out. Batman v Superman obviously getting cut to pieces, and then we release an ultimate edition that's infinitely better than the theatrical cut in terms of cohesiveness and a vision, you know what I mean? And then the same thing with Suicide Squad. They bring in that other company to do the editing for the movie, and it just really changes what David Ayer was going for. So Matt Reeves watches this play out, and before he signs on to make a Batman movie, he wants to make sure this will not happen to him.
Yeah, and I think that was actually, if you remember, like, kind of he stepped away from negotiations for a little while. And I think that was part of the reason.
Yeah, I do remember that, because we were hearing his name tossed around a lot. And then it was like, Matt Reeves is done, and then it was like the next day, Matt Reeves is back on board.
Yeah.
So that, that's a good theory, Taylor. Did that get reported concretely?
I think it was, but I didn't write down the source on that one, so.
Okay.
Go search it out, listeners, you'll find it. We'll maybe post it in the notes, or someone else will.
Okay. So, anyway, let me just say why I am stoked about this. I just think that having seen these two most recent Planet of the Apes films... All right, let me just break it down, by the way. He talks about it. So, first of all, he says he wants to make it personal. If you ever thought you could feel like you were a chimpanzee, then there's probably something wrong with you. But if you watch these Planet of the Apes movies, you will feel like you could relate to a chimpanzee and he could be your best friend. It's the coolest thing. He successfully took a character that I thought would be very unrelatable, and I knew everything that character was thinking and feeling, and I was rooting for him the whole time. That was incredible to me. He also, which is something I really like about Batman movies, if he can make this come to pass, he successfully made a huge blockbuster movie where the scope was so small that the stakes were extremely high, if that makes sense. If we think about something like even Suicide Squad, just to level a little bit of criticism, the scope was kind of small, but at the same time, it blew up at the last second too. Oh, by the way, my swirling circle of trash is going to blow up the entire world, including all these military secret bases that you have not seen the whole movie. It just blew up a little too big at the last second. Whereas these Planet of the Apes movies are just about the main character, Caesar, and his group of apes that he's helped liberate from, like, this, it was like a preservation or conservation place, and then like local zoos and stuff. There's just you know, a couple hundred of them, and Caesar's the leader, but it's just about them and how they fare in the world. It's not about the entire planet, as you would expect from the title. And that made it feel shockingly intense when you were thinking about what was going to happen to the characters, and it was very emotional. Yeah, I'm talking very emotional. Some of the most emotional movies I've seen for the last little bit, last couple of years at least. So I love that. Because of the way he wrote it, I fully trust him to make a cool Batman story, because that's one thing that I think benefits Batman a lot. We don't have to watch Batman save the world, especially in the DC universe now, because we've got Wonder Woman out there for that. We've got Superman out there.
We have
the Justice League.
Yeah.
We can watch Batman do something that's intensely personal and emotional, and that will make it feel a very gripping tale, I think. So that's what I really loved about these Apes movies that I thought was super cool. And writing was a big strength for him. I loved the symbolism he threw in. He did a really good job of setting up situations that caused me, at least, to look at humanity as a whole and think about what we do. And I really enjoy that. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into spoilers on these movies, because I really enjoyed them. I want everybody to see War for the Planet of the Apes. Very cool. But maybe we'll talk about it on the Beyond the Ape Cave podcast, which we're launching soon.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
No, those are great thoughts. I'm really excited. Kind of the more I hear from Matt Reeves, you know, either interviews or I'm looking forward to watching these recent ape films.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes in theaters, so I can't speak too much to that one. I just watched it on my TV, so I didn't notice as much. But War for the Planet of the Apes was gorgeous. It was a gorgeous film. Just seeing it on an IMAX screen was super cool. Some of the shots, I would just, like, rip them off and put them on my wall. Just, that's like, awesome. Four apes on horses riding down the beach with a little girl. It was super cool. And just their silhouettes, you know? Anyway, yeah. Very, very beautiful film. So I think he'll definitely bring that to Batman as well.
Great. Yeah, I'm not sure how to follow that. I haven't seen Apes films yet. I saw the first one, but that was not a Matt Reeves film, so...
Yeah, that was still good, though. Still great. I still liked it a lot.
Yeah. So I think... The takeaway here is we're excited. I'm sure Andy can say the same, comfortable and confident that the Batman is in the hands of Matt Reeves at this point.
Yeah, I would put that movie right into his hands and just trust him fully, because we've already heard from him that he loved Batman growing up. He's got Geoff Johns, you know, there. Even if he trashed his script, like, I don't really mind that.
Yeah, I'm sure Geoff Johns is going to be somewhat understanding of, you know, just... Because he's kind of like an outside player, but very inside at the same time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
There comes a point during the revisions of a script where it just gets a little bit too, what's the word I'm looking for? Convoluted, maybe, with the amount of rewrites it goes through. And that script's been being worked on for at least 6 months, right? Yeah, a long time.
I think even longer.
Longer than that. So... You imagine at this point, after bringing another director to take a pass over the script, if he decided like it was going to be harder to reconcile his vision with what was already there, like, I trust him. Yeah. I do. Let's get something really nice, really good. We've got Batfleck in the cowl still. Like, I'm feeling really good about this movie.
Great. So two things I want to bring up are kind of discussion items here before we move on from the Batman. So since this is a complete scratch, what do you think this means for Deathstroke? Are we going to see him at all?
Here's the thing about that. I've seen people postulating that Deathstroke is out of the film. I don't think that's necessarily true, because here's one point to keep in mind. Deathstroke is not necessarily just a Batman villain. You know what I mean? Like, he could pop up anywhere.
Yeah.
So he could pop up on the Batman film, but they're not just going to toss Joe Manganiello to the curb. Because they've got him committed to play Deathstroke. He's been reading comics. He could show up in any movie.
That's true.
And the thing, I think they will keep him because, kind of similarly to that first point where he's not just a Batman villain, Deathstroke can work for anybody. So if you need, I don't know, he could just play a role in this movie. I think it's very easy to see Deathstroke fitting in anywhere. He's super versatile as a character.
Yeah, because we were talking about kind of noir films last time, and, you know, a lot of those kind of bring up, like, kind of the mobster vibes and things like that. And, you know, any one of them, like you said, could bring Deathstroke into the picture. And so, I just had a cool idea, though. What if we see him with Nightwing?
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would definitely ring true to the fans of the Teen Titans series. Mm-hmm. I would love that, especially if they just call him Slade. That'd be cool.
Oh, man.
Because Deathstroke was way too scary for Cartoon Network. Too scary of a name. Yeah, I don't think Joe Manganiello is going anywhere. It might be a little bit longer until we see him, but they already got the suit fitted to the guy. I mean, why throw him away now? He's stoked about it. He's been talking about it. I think Joe Manganiello will definitely be Deathstroke.
Yeah, I hope to see him. I think we will. I'm with you there. The last thing, and this actually goes back to my comment about him, about Matt Reeves stepping away. This was the actual thing. I did write it down. This was from also the MTV's Happy Sad Confused podcast. In regards to when we might see the Batman film, because he talked about in that podcast that the reason he stepped away was that he explained that he needed a break after working on the Planet of the Apes films for three plus years.
Yeah.
And so, because they went and agreed with that, you know, we can just kind of assume that they're not going to start production right now after his films come out. I don't know how long of a break he needs, but we'll talk about dates a little bit in the future on this episode. But, you know, probably not going to go right away. Probably
don't expect to begin this year is what it says here.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit longer than maybe we were anticipating before. But there's been a lot of changes.
And we could still see a 2019. And I think that's kind of what we were expecting at this
point.
Yeah,
that's true. So I'm fine with that. As long as it's good. So I'm telling you.
Cool. Well, that's our Batman wrap-up, if you will.
Yeah,
have
the
a bit
Batman.
Of news on Justice League. Not big news, but big potential future news as of the next few days, potentially. So Warner Brothers has come out and said that they hope to showcase Justice League and Aquaman at Comic-Con, which I believe is this weekend, San Diego Comic-Con.
Dude, one of the side effects of a busy summer, like, I thought about Comic-Con here and there, but it's here already, and
is it
I was
always
barely
this late
expecting
July? Is it?
Yeah, it's usually
week?
Around the 20th,
okay.
I believe.
I get it mixed up with E3 sometimes, so I'm just like, and I think that's back in May, so. Anyways.
Holy cow.
But yeah, so this is what they said. They said that they are, their press release said, and the greatest superheroes of the DC universe united for the first time on the big screen with stars Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa, Ezra Miller, and Ray Fisher, talking all things Justice League, as well as an early look at director James Wan's Aquaman. And so,
hey, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And one thing that's gotten me excited, for those of us who maybe live a little bit too far away to attend, the pattern lately has been, at least for Warner Brothers, everything's online, which
yeah.
is cool. So if we get some exclusive footage for Aquaman, that could be awesome.
Because they've been shooting since May, so they could easily have a little, even if it's like a little sizzle reel like we had last year for Justice League.
Oh yeah, they could have something put together. I can't believe it's been a year since that Justice League thing came out. Holy
yeah.
cow. That was crazy. I could not believe how much footage they gave us then. So I think definitely we get another trailer for Justice League.
Yeah, I think
I'm almost 100%.
Because it's been, what, 3 months now?
Yeah, if you want to debut something somewhere with a lot of buzz, Hall H is the place to do it. The atmosphere there is just unreal. Like, I've never even stepped foot in there, and it just gives me goosebumps thinking about some of the things that I've seen go down in there. So that's the place to do it. If you want to generate the most amount of, well, really just word of mouth for a trailer or anything, like, that's where you do it. So
yeah.
I think they've got to.
Cool. Do you think, I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but some people have pointed out that Henry Cavill's not going to be there for Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And he's shooting Mission Impossible right now, I think. And so, but do you think he might be in this second trailer and he might show up unexpectedly in Hall H?
I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, honestly, Warner Brothers hasn't been too much about those big surprises like that at Comic-Con. Usually, like, they give a list of what they're doing, and then they do that.
That's true.
And if there's a surprise, it's like, yeah, here's some more footage. It's never like, here's everybody in their costumes. And, you know,
yeah.
like, I remember that happened with the Avengers, and it was like a total surprise, and everybody lost their minds. I don't think we just see Henry Cavill walk out onto the stage in a Superman suit. Like, I just don't think he'll be there.
Yeah.
If he could make it, that'd be cool. he could do what he did last year and go with like a, he was wearing some kind of mask, wasn't he? He was wearing the V for Vendetta mask and like taking pictures with Will Smith and stuff. That was funny. Yeah, I think if he shows up, that's how he does it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Cool. So we're excited. We'll probably have an episode next week with all the stuff that comes out from
Comic-Con. Yeah, the Comic-Con stuff. Good Comic-Con special. Hopefully better than last year's. Remember last year we recorded with the wrong microphone and it was just total disaster. Oh, no. So don't worry. We learned how to be podcasters now. We can do it.
We've grown up in the world of podcasting.
That means we're like way past the year anniversary for Beyond the Batcave, right?
That's true.
Happy 1 year to us. I don't know if we ever talked about that on the air. I remember talking with you off the air. But yeah, good year, everybody. You all made it awesome for us.
Here's to another.
Okay.
Cool. And that's most of our Justice League news. One tiny tidbit of news we're not really going to go into much here is just that there is a toy line released for Justice League, and it gives a look at Steppenwolf. Now, you have to take these with a grain of salt, just because there was one for Ares before Wonder Woman, and it didn't quite look like him 100%. So, but it does give you kind of speculation as to what he might look like in the film, because we haven't seen him yet. So, go and check that out if you want.
Jeez, Kmart's the worst. Like, count on Kmart to be the one to stock some weird-looking version of Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, we just thought we'd throw that out there in case you like to look out for those things.
I did see some other cool merchandise. I saw a little bit of I've seen some t-shirts out there now.
Oh, yeah.
With the new designs for Flash and Batman on them and stuff. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Like, the marketing will ramp up.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be time to focus on Justice League as soon as Comic-Con's over. I think the news is going to start hitting fast and hard. Maybe not immediately after, but it's almost here. We got 4 months to go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
And so I'm actually going to jump ahead a little bit because at Comic-Con, I believe they are going to announce... Well, I don't know if they said they were going to announce. But they did... DC did come out... Warner Brothers did come out and say, give us 2 new release dates for DC films.
Okay.
They are February 14th of 2020 and June 5th of 2020. And so they didn't say what those are. I'm blanking right now. I want to say that they said they were going to mention what they are at Comic-Con, but
yeah, I bet one of those is Flash, almost certainly. And if you forced me to put money on it, I'd say the other one is Man of Steel 2.
Cool.
Those are my official guesses. But if like you say, we do find out at Comic-Con, then that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I don't know. Maybe these ones that I'm thinking ever coming sooner. But I have seen, you know, kind of speculations that might be Gotham City Sirens and Wonder Woman 2. Just because we kind of already heard from Patty Jenkins that they're working on Wonder Woman 2, even though she hasn't officially been announced.
Yeah.
And we know Gotham City Sirens has kind of hit the green light. But we do have a lot of untitled films, supposedly.
I would guess Gotham City Sirens comes even sooner.
Yeah.
Than those 2 dates.
Though it would be cool. Someone pointed out that it would be cool to kind of see them market the Valentine's Day with
Harley Gotham Quinn. City Sirens. Yeah, that'd be cool.
But
I mean, you can just as easily market Valentine's Day with Henry Cavill, one of the most attractive men I have ever seen. Which brings me to another unrelated point. Another movie I watched that I probably should have watched like 10 years ago. I saw this recently, like last week, Count of Monte Cristo, the one from 2002. Have you ever seen that?
I don't know if I have. I don't think so.
Very, very cool film. Actually, very Batman-esque.
Huh.
I loved it. But Henry Cavill plays one of the main characters, and he's like 18 or 19. Still, he's like drop-dead gorgeous. It's unreal, because he's like super skinny, but he still has that, like, the jawline is insane and the cleft chin. But he's playing like a 15-year-old in the movie. And so I'm like, yeah, right. That guy's not 15. But super cool. Second recommendation. Well, first one was watch those Planet of the Apes films. Second one, Count of Monte Cristo. If you want a very Batman-esque revenge tale, it was very cool. Actually put me a little bit in mind of Batman v Superman. Because it kind of follows that same revenge tragedy kind of plot.
Okay.
Where it's like tragedy at the beginning. Hero spends the whole time preparing, planning. Things get worse. He comes to that ultimate moment when he decides whether to take his revenge or not. And then you just have to see what happens from there.
Oh, dang.
So,
I'll put that
and
on my list.
Young Henry Cavill looking good in like a doublet and some frilly collars because he's in whatever century France. It's like right after Napoleon, so like maybe 1890s, I'd say.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, whatever. Great. We're not talking about Count of Monte Cristo. I'm sorry. I'm easily sidetracked today.
That's all right. Cool. So we'll stay tuned with those release dates and see what comes. We might hit those again later in the episode. We'll see. But we want to talk a little bit about Wonder Woman, kind of give you an update on the box office because it's still crushing it. So it is currently number 3 in the top 5 movies of 2017. I think it's probably been there for a while, but
yeah, it was still winning weekends up until really recently.
Yeah, it's currently sitting at $381 million domestic, and it is number 4 for 2017 worldwide, hitting $766 million. And so, just to kind of give you some perspective on some recent films that kind of have done similar, or some other DCU films. So it's been out for about 46 days, and it's made 381 domestic. BVS in its 46 days made 327. So it's far surpassed that. It's passed BVS and Suicide Squad domestically in just 28 days, as opposed to kind of the 90-day runs that those other films had.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so it's still got time to do a lot more too. It's passed Suicide Squad globally, not quite with Batman v Superman. It's still got a bit
more room. Yeah, Suicide Squad didn't have China,
that's true,
if you remember. So, and BVS did. So, very cool. Happy to see Wonder Woman doing so well. Do we think it passes Guardians of the Galaxy? It's kind of a steep ask. It's another $100 million.
Yeah, I guess if you're doing worldwide.
Yeah.
Domestic, it's only got $5 million to go. So I think it probably will domestically.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, another $100 million is going to be a lot to ask at this point. But
okay, well, I guess we'll see. I would love to see it pass Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Mm-hmm. Me too, yeah.
So I think it deserves it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Just for the kind of movie it is and what it means to people.
Yeah. So that'd be cool.
I'm glad it's ahead of Pirates 5. Actually, have you seen Pirates 5?
I have not. Have you?
No, I haven't seen a Pirates movie for a long time.
That's all right. I think I've seen all of them but this one, but I don't really have any desire to see this one.
Okay. But people are going to it. It must be kind of good.
I think they have a huge worldwide audience. Like, domestically.
People love pirates, I guess.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what it is, but they're fun. I mean, you have to admire some aspects of it. Like, they try to really do some practical effects and stuff and do some really crazy stuff with those pirate ships. So, it's kind of a visual spectacle, to say the least. And then, you know, if you can get a good story out of that, too, all the better. So, yeah. And then, just kind of some other tidbits about how it's doing. So, with Wonder Woman, DCEU has passed the 3 billion... mark globally.
Hey, that's awesome. Is that counting Man of Steel?
That's counting Man of Steel.
So that's 4 films.
Uh-huh.
Not bad. Those are some money makers.
Yeah. And so
good
just,
job.
Just to give you a comparison, and we know that this isn't a fair comparison, just to start off, but the Marvel films hit it in their 6th film, which was The Avengers, which made $1.5 billion by itself.
Yeah, so that's, I think they really chummed the waters for the superhero.
Yeah.
Genre.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an unfair comparison because, you know, I don't think DCEU films would get quite the attention if Marvel hadn't already kind of beefed up the superhero films. But
yeah,
it's still great to see that they're hitting their stride.
You could make the argument that Batman Begins really started this all. That's what got
people interested. That's 2006. That's 2 years earlier.
You could make the argument that it was Spider-Man, too. But, speaking of Spider-Man, I have a new favorite Marvel movie, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Really?
Excellent movie.
I saw it, too.
I liked it.
Surprised it's your favorite. I like it a lot, and I've heard a lot of people say the same thing.
Well, here's my thing. Spider-Man is the only superhero that I love that predates Batman for me. He was my original favorite. I used to wake up every morning at, like, 5 o'clock and watch Spider-Man and his amazing friends with Iceman and Firestar, I think was her name. Because it's definitely not Starfire, because she's DC. But yeah, Iceman and Firestar, and they would like fight against just super cheesy 70s villains. It was awesome. So I always loved Spider-Man, and it was great to see a Marvel movie where what I was just talking about happened. Brought down the scope of the movie so much that the stakes felt a lot higher.
Yeah.
I was a lot more thrilled by Spider-Man than I have been by a Marvel movie for a little bit.
Great. Awesome.
Have you seen it, Taylor? Did you just
tell me? Yeah, oh, yeah, I saw it last Tuesday, so it was a good time. I liked it a lot. I think Tom Holland's great.
It was wonderful, yeah. He was super good.
Yeah.
They actually borrowed a lot from Miles Morales' Spider-Man.
Yeah.
A lot of that material was not pure Peter Parker. Like, I think the scene where he drops the Death Star, I remember reading that straight out of a Miles Morales comic. That's exactly what happens. Well, he crawls in on the ceiling and
Ultimate
his buddy...
Spider-Man is, like, the most high school-esque of all of them. So that's the title where Miles is right now, so...
Oh, man. I had a pretty serious Ultimate Spider-Man binge a couple years ago. I know I've told you about this before. It's because Marvel, their comics are a little bit more accessible than DC's, I think, because of the way they do their subscription. You can get a Marvel Unlimited subscription and read anything you want, whereas I'm buying every DC book.
Yeah.
It's a lot more cost efficient. Therefore, I read like 12 years of Spider-Man in a month. I couldn't afford to do that with Batman.
It's true. It's a huge chunk of change.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, why did we start talking about that?
We talked about comparing to Marvel films.
Because Spider-Man, we were arguing that maybe started the whole superhero trend. But you could also make the argument that it was X-Men even earlier.
That's true, yeah.
It's been going on for like 20 years. It's been building to this point, and I think DCEU movies are making more per movie, for sure, than Marvel movies.
By far. I mean, you think, I wrote down some of them. Iron Man made about $500 million, Hulk $200 million. Iron Man 2, 600, Thor 400, so...
Now, let's just talk about this for a minute. Why do we think that is? I think probably a little bit has to do with name recognition.
Yeah.
When Iron Man came out, nobody knew who Iron Man was. So even though I believe that's an excellent film, nobody knew who Iron Man was. And it didn't make that much at the box office, right? Like, it did well enough for itself.
Yeah, 585.
585, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good, especially for the first of a franchise.
Yeah. But then... So I think another part of it's got to be we hear so much criticism leveled against the DC movies, but is that really representative of what people feel at all? Yeah. I think it's kind of tough because the people that I like and associate with, lots of them have a vested interest in superhero movies, and lots of them don't like DC movies just because of what they read on the internet, I think. But the vast majority of people that are going to these, I think, do not get on Twitter and look for news about the DCEU so they can slam it. There's got to be the majority of the audience doesn't really care about that.
Yeah.
And that's why we're seeing such big numbers? I don't know.
I think you're onto something there. I think a lot of times, well, you think about the big names. So we've had four DCEU films, right?
Yeah.
Everybody loves Superman. Everybody loves Batman and Superman. So you just got like the biggest superhero names ever.
That's true.
I think. And then Wonder Woman, everybody's been waiting a long time for that. And you've got this whole kind of female empowerment behind it. And
then Harley Quinn.
Yeah. So I think just they drop the big names right off the bat. And they sell
the ones that we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
The top three earners. I'm not just talking movies. I'm talking about everything. Like... just merchandise in general is Spider-Man and then Batman and Superman. I think in that order.
Yeah.
So like Batman and Superman, those movies are pretty much guaranteed to make money because kids like them. I mean, I don't know how many kids loved Man of Steel. I'll be honest. That's true. One was probably a little bit boring if you're a child.
Yeah.
I loved it, but.
Oh yeah.
Some would argue that I'm not a child. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So the last little tidbit is it's currently sitting at number 9 against all superhero films.
That's just stellar, considering the superhero films that we've had. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think I have a list.
Yeah, what's the list? What's in front of it?
So number 1 is Marvel's Avengers. Then we have The Dark Knight, Avengers Age of Ultron, The Dark Knight Rises, Iron Man 3, Captain America Civil War, Spider-Man... that's the first Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Wonder Woman. Followed by Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I think I see Wonder Woman kind of staying at that spot on the list.
Yeah.
Or falling to number 10. Because honestly, Spider-Man is tearing up the box office still.
Well, he did have the second biggest, or he had the biggest drop of all time for a second weekend of all
Marvel, did that just happen?
Of the Marvel films.
Do you want me to tell you why?
Yes.
Planet of the Apes.
I think that has a big part of it.
Planet of the Apes immediately won. yeah. over Spider-Man the next weekend. Nothing beat Wonder Woman for 3 weeks, I think.
Well, wasn't anything worth beating it.
Yeah, so. For sure. Just unlucky, honestly, for Spider-Man.
I do think it'll have some legs, though. Yeah. So.
I would go see it again.
Because one interesting thing I saw on Box Office Mojo, I mean, now we're talking to Spider-Man, 11-day totals, it is only 10 million below the first Spider-Man movie, which is in the top 10 of all time. So it could have some legs and word of mouth.
It has some staying power. I think Spider-Man is also a friendlier movie to take your kids to on a summer day than War of the Planet of the Apes.
Definitely.
Yeah, like I said, that movie was very intense, thrilling. Not a lot of laughs in it, though. There was some comic relief, but not a lot. I would feel much more comfortable taking a kid and feeling that they'll be entertained by Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Me and my wife were both in stitches almost the whole time. It was a good, funny movie for kids.
Great. Well, there's your Wonder Woman news.
Yeah, there's the box office report.
The box office report. Here.
Good job, everybody.
Yeah, we made it through. One last tidbit of actually Wonder Woman news is...
You said one last tidbit, like the last seven tidbits, Taylor.
Okay, well, that's just going to be my thing, all right?
Start off the episode. All right, we got one last tidbit for you guys.
Welcome to Beyond the Batcave. That was awesome. So, Screen Rant has been reporting that Wonder Woman 2, the sequel Patty Jenkins and Geoff Johns have started writing, but hasn't been officially announced. Is going to take place in the Cold War in the 1980s, and I believe that the Wrap has confirmed that with their sources. And the interesting thing is, and probably a discussion point here, is Chris Pine has been reported to return as Steve Trevor.
That is interesting. So here's my theory. I think, like every good actor named Chris that plays a man named Steve in a superhero movie about a world war, he probably actually crashed the plane into a frozen ocean and is now underwater frozen.
Yeah, okay.
And then they'll just melt him, Scooby-Doo style, and he'll wake back up and, you know...
Have I told you my theory about a Wonder Woman sequel?
No, tell me.
I don't know if I told us on air, but and it's actually inspired from our podcast here when we watched the Justice League episode, Paradise Lost. Because I think it would be cool to bring in someone magical like Felix Faust. I don't think he's going to be the big bad, but yeah, like kind of the Dr. Poison sub bad.
Yeah,
and I think it would be really cool to have, like, at the climax or almost climax of the film, have Felix tempt Diana that he can resurrect Steve Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know, like, if she's wandering a city and she just, like, sees him somewhere and, like, wait, Steve? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And, like, kind of have visions of him almost. Yeah. And then Felix says, like, hey, if you do this thing, I can bring back Steve Trevor for you. Like, I think that would be a huge kind of startle for Wonder Woman, and I think it'd be kind of appealing way to bring him back without, like, trying to explain how he survived in that
plane.
Okay,
that's cool. I do like that theory a lot. I like that idea. The only problem I think I see with it is just because of the nature of the business. I think if you're bringing back Chris Pine, they're going to, like, bring him back, especially since we're hearing about it this early.
That's true. You have to wonder why they market it that way.
Yeah. Because I could expect something like that from a surprise cameo, maybe. Just like other things we've seen in the past. Yeah, like that just happened in War of the Planet of the Apes, actually. Toby Kebbell makes a surprise appearance as Koba. Like, not that anybody knew it was him, because it's motion capture. But it was very similar to what you just described. And nobody knew about that, I don't believe. Yeah, I gotta believe he's got a bigger part than that if they're announcing it this far in advance. But I like your idea a lot. I think that's, cinematically, it would probably work better.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes, because I just hope...
Maybe it's Steve Trevor Jr. I don't know, maybe they just totally ate their words on that.
It's what, like, 60, 70 years?
1980s to, yeah, the 1910s, that's a good 7 years.
So definitely could be kind of the grandson, which I think they did in the TV series, was they had Steve Trevor's grandson pop up and help Wonder Woman.
Was that an episode of Justice League?
It might have been.
We'll get to it. I remember something like that from when I was a kid. Okay. Well, that's fine. Next bit of news. I saw this last week, I think, and I was mildly excited for it.
Yeah.
So they're making the new animated DC feature they're working on is Gotham by Gaslight, which is a much beloved Elseworlds tale of Batman. Have you read this, Taylor?
I have not. It's on my list. I just finished Dark Victory, and then I'm going to read.
Oh, dude, you finished Dark Victory? Yeah. What did you think of that?
Oh, I loved it so much.
That was super cool, huh?
We'll have to talk about it here.
Okay.
And then next is Batman Europa, and then Gotham by Gaslight.
Batman Europa was pretty cool. So. I liked that. Oh, I was like, you're reading books that I own. I just remembered that we're like using the same books.
Surprise!
Okay. Yeah. Europa was pretty cool. Pretty trippy as well.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that some other point.
But anyways, I'm about to read it very soon, probably in the next
week. Yeah, Gotham by Gaslight, I will say, was enjoyable, but I didn't find that it lived up to the hype for me.
Yeah. In concept, just knowing what it's about, mm-hmm. like, I see myself very interested in it.
Yeah, and it gripped me really well through the first half of the book, but the second half was a struggle for me to get through.
Okay.
I feel like it kind of falls off.
So if you don't know what it's about, so here's kind of a description given by Batman News. When they reviewed it initially, I thought it was a good one. It said, originally published in 1989, Gotham by Gaslight tells the what-if story of a 19th century caped crusader who comes face to face with the Butcher of Whitechapel. It's Batman versus Jack the Ripper, written by Brian Augustin and illustrated by none other than the creator of Hellboy, Mike Mignola.
Yeah, so it's a very cool concept. There's some striking images, kind of reminiscent of almost like Nightmare Batman from BVS. Almost like that, not quite. He's a little bit more old-timey looking. I liked the comic, didn't love it. So the reason I say I'm excited is that they're willing to branch out in this stuff. People have been asking for this one for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, ever since I've been following DC films at all, people have been asking for Gotham by Gaslight as an animated film, and it's finally happening. So that's cool.
Yeah. So the one question I have along with this is a film we've talked about a little bit here. So this was leaked on... Gotham by Gaslight was leaked on Amazon because they had the back of the box for Batman and Harley Quinn, which says a sneak peek at the next film by DC Animated. Mm. And it says Gotham by Gaslight. But so they quote it as the next film. My question is, when are we going to see Batman versus Two-Face? Because I really want that.
Are you talking about the...
the animated follow-up to Adam West Return of one? The Caped Crusaders.
I feel like that was announced, wasn't it? Was it for, like...
I don't think it has a
coming
date
summer?
Yet.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I think it's, like, slated for this year, but we haven't heard anything about it. So,
well,
I don't know if there's anything
to talk. We'll do a little digging.
About.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, I want to see that as well.
I really want to see that one. Especially kind of at being Adam West's last... kind of taking out the cowl.
His last hurrah.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, let's, let's talk some Justice League, huh?
Let's do it.
We're finally back. There's finally, like, actually, there was a decent amount of news. Maybe we stretched it a little bit.
That's true.
By talking about things that had nothing to do with DC films. But yeah, for quite a while, we haven't done our reviews of Justice League episodes. But we're back with that. And these are episodes that I remembered a lot from when I was a kid. So I was excited to watch them. And it was the two-parter, The Brave and the Bold. And actually, I was a little disappointed in these, having watched them now as an adult.
I'm sorry.
Because I remembered, yeah, I remembered liking them a lot as a kid. There's still some great moments, but yeah, I think you even have some points written down in our notes that I was going to bring up as well. So, if you don't remember these ones, the summary is basically Green Lantern and Flash team up to fight against Gorilla Grodd. Which sounds pretty cool. However, I think one of the weaknesses of the series was exposed here that I hadn't really noticed yet. Flash, by himself as a character, does not work well in this universe, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was a little bit painful to watch, especially the first part of this episode.
Yeah, I think this episode started off super weak. Super weak. Like, it was the first moment, I think, mm-hmm. of all these episodes we watched so far, which is, what, probably, like, five, if you're combining the
others. Yeah.
Anyways, it was the first moment of all five that I'm like, ugh. Like, I didn't, like, love what I was watching. I think just, like, it was really weak and really slow, and some of Flash's writing was really off. Like, some of his one-liners, I was like, Was that necessary? Yeah. Like, I know you're the Flash and you make jokes all the time, but it wasn't even funny.
I just think the problem was a wasted opportunity. This was an opportunity to flesh out the Flash as a character and do something a little bit more emotional with him, like we have remember the Wonder Woman episode where we went back and went to Themyscira with Diana and we really got some good emotional moments from her and her mom. Just nothing doing here with Flash. Like, the whole time it's just Flash in the suit. I feel like half the episode is just him chasing things around, and it really bothered me that how underpowered he is.
Oh, yeah, because he has this car chase.
Yeah.
And he'll, like, stop to help somebody who could, you know, have collateral damage and get hurt. But then, like, it takes him, like, 10 minutes to catch up to the car again. I'm like, that shouldn't happen.
And it's not even consistent within this universe. I remember there's... I don't think we've watched these episodes yet, but I remember there's one where he's, like, repeatedly running around the world punching Lex Luthor in the face.
Yeah.
Over and over again, like, within a second. And he's showing nowhere near that kind of speed. He's running, like, at best 70 miles an hour. So, like, this is a Flash that could be beaten by a cheetah in a race.
Yeah.
And I just... Yeah. And honestly, it annoys me in the CW series, like, how sometimes they show him going super fast, and then sometimes he just stands around watching stuff. This is, like, 40 times worse. This was really hard for me to watch, considering... I realize it's challenging, because the Flash can be a tough character, right? But once you establish he can run, like, almost the speed of light, really, what challenge does he have?
Yeah.
But, anyway.
Yeah,
so... I guess that's my main complaint. I wanted to see something more personal for the Flash. Didn't get it.
They had the opportunity, and they kind of lost it.
Yeah. Because we also had that for Jon Stewart. Remember the episode where,
Oh, yeah.
He was on trial. Yeah. And, yeah, we got a good look into his personality, but the Flash was nothing more than the same comic relief that he has been.
Yeah, there's nothing new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because I like Wally West. I think he's a cool character and a lost opportunity, honestly, right here.
And he's a great supporting character in a lot of these episodes, but, you know, kind of holding his own. Not super great.
No, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So that was my main complaint with it. As for the story, I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it got better as it went on. Because, to be honest, and then I don't want to hand in my DC Comics card here, but so they start chasing the white monkey, right? And I'm like, oh, is that Grodd? But that doesn't look like Grodd. And then they kind of catch up to him, and then he's like, my name is Solovar.
Yeah, nobody faults you for not knowing that much about Gorilla City, honestly. I think you can keep your card for that one.
As soon as he drops the name Solovar, I had just finished, like, a few weeks ago, watching Attack on Gorilla City, the CW Flash episode from last season. And so I'm like, wait, Solovar? I just saw you in CW Flash. Because that was the leader of Gorilla City that he beat. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so I thought that was kind of cool to kind of see something that I just saw, you know, in the animated form.
Yeah.
And awesome. To know that it has comic roots, you know. Because I assume most I see has comic roots, but you never know. Especially with CW these days.
Yeah, I've never read a comic about Gorilla City. Now I'm thinking about it. One that went back to Gorilla City. I've seen Grodd sometimes, but... Yes. Anyway, that was very cool. I like Solovar as a character. I liked the introduction we got to Gorilla City. It felt a little bit Atlantis-y, honestly, like, just to see people, I don't know, just the way it felt, isolated, very harsh leaders, like, I don't know. Also, I thought it was interesting to see, like, the innocent gorillas that were just kind of walking around. They very much mirrored the humans that we see in Justice League that are just kind of hanging around the cities. They just, like, gasped and ran away from things. You think a big clan of gorillas would have something more to say about it than...
All 12 of them that, like, populate this metropolis.
Yeah. That was funny. Anyway, so I think the idea of Gorilla City... It sounds like a weird concept, but it actually is very cool.
Yeah. And I mentioned how, like, I feel like this story kind of gets... better and better as it goes along. I feel like some of the Justice League episodes, like, you hit a point where the story kind of ends and we just need to finish everything by fighting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't feel like this one does it at all.
That's
like,
true. This was a little bit more interesting than that.
Yeah. And like, from really the moment of the last moment of the first part, you know, where Grodd caused the explosion and, you know, Central City's off the map.
Yeah, I was actually, like, a little bit distressed by that.
I was like, whoa, what? And I was like, what just happened? And how is this going to get resolved? And I think, like, throughout the whole episode, the second part, I was like, I couldn't see easily how it was going to unfold.
Yeah,
and that's true. I thought that was a really good story.
Story was a little bit more interesting. Now, the thing I will say about it is I feel like some Justice League episodes, now I realize this is a children's cartoon, and that's why I loved it in the beginning when I started watching this, but this story was a little bit lacking on deeper themes, which I feel like some Justice League episodes do a really good job of bringing up more mature themes to deal with. For yeah. example, the one where Jon Stewart was on trial. That one actually had something to say. Whereas I feel like this one, while it had a cool story, it was a little bit more shallow. There's not too much to dissect with it. There aren't any decisions to question. Really, it was all just kind of entertainment, but still, I was entertained, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
Let's see. Good moment that I loved. This is our first hint of the Batman and Wonder Woman having a crush on each other.
Oh, yeah. Hardcore.
That was cute.
And, like, everybody kind of acknowledges it in the Justice League. Yeah. I feel like they're all kind of standing by where he's trying to unbury, like, unearth Diana under the rocket.
Yeah. Because he's seriously worried about her.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very sweet. But, yeah, I'm a fan of this. Oh. I ship them.
I love the Wonder Bat. I hope we get some little inklings of that in the Justice League. Like in the DCEU, like they don't have to like date or anything, but like I could totally see from the Justice League film them going out on these adventures trying to find all the metahumans, like a very very close friendship, you know what I mean?
And
like if something were to happen to one or the other, they would care the most, you know, mm-hmm. about the other's well being. So I think it's cool to kind of see that.
All right,
she returns a little kiss on the cheek.
Oh, yeah, a little kiss on the cheek. After she notices that his gauntlets are all dirty. I guess that's one of the complaints I have. I feel like with the Bruce Wayne that's established in the animated series, you don't see him blushing about things very often.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he actually blushes.
Yeah, he didn't blush. He shyly turned away.
But let's be honest, if Wonder Woman were to kiss any of us on the cheek, how could you contain
yourself?
Well,
I'm just thinking, there, she does in fact kiss Batman on more than just the cheek in a later episode.
That's true.
And I remember that she's like, sorry about that, and he goes, don't be, and he like gives her this huge grin. So I feel like he's got the chops to handle this. He maybe just needs to take some time to get himself together, sort out how he feels. So anyway, now we talked a little Wonder Bat. Yeah, I guess maybe that's the weakness of this episode. I just don't have too much to say about it. Like, it was entertaining. I liked it. I already mentioned my complaints about Flash. I feel like Green Lantern was really interchangeable with just about anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like that could have been anybody hanging out with Flash. And honestly, besides the fact that it was Gorilla Grodd, I feel like it could have been anybody but Flash, too. So, yeah, this one's middle of the road for me. Yeah. It definitely entertained me. However, yeah, it shattered my childhood illusion. I just remembered really liking this one when I was a kid. I think it was the idea of the gorillas that I liked.
Yeah.
So, for me, I'm going to give this one maybe 1 out of 2 bananas sitting on a tray that Flash tries to feed to a gorilla. So, I guess that translates to like a B minus.
Oh, okay. I was going to say 50% is not a... Anyways,
I was just trying to remember how many bananas were actually on that tray, and I think it was 2.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. I would give it a solid B. Like, if it were, like, just the first part, probably, like, in the C range. But it bumps up to a B, kind of, as it progresses. So, yeah. So, that's our kind of little take on the Brave and the Bold Justice League episodes. Our next one are entitled Fury, Part 1 and 2, Episodes 14 and 15. So...
yeah, we probably won't be talking about this next episode because of Comic-Con.
Yeah. But hopefully
soon,
in the next 6 months, as opposed to the last time we did a Justice League.
The margin will definitely be smaller.
Yeah. So stay
tuned. And I don't remember this one at all, so it'll be a total surprise for me.
Yeah, it'll be a good time.
All right. Well, I think we'll about wrap it up there.
Yeah. So if you want to reach out to us, you know where to find us. We are at beyondthebatcave.com is our website. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us at Beyond the Batcave, Batman-centric DC Movies Podcast, or on Twitter as @BeyondBatcave.
And I do want to acknowledge really quick, I know we have some listener feedback, and maybe you feel like we've been ignoring that. We're not. We're just a little bit pressed for time right at this moment, so we got to wrap up the episode.
So we'll probably spend some time in the next episode or two kind of
catching up. Because we have some good feedback about our Batman episode. by Adam West, I think. A couple other things that we definitely want to acknowledge. So thank you so much for sending that in, and we'll definitely catch up just acknowledging all that next episode.
Cool. Yeah. So for Andy Piper, this is Taylor Jackson. This is Beyond the Batcave. We are signing off.